Hello, and thanks for joining us on the podcast that discusses all things gaming. Coming to you from the home of Gen Con and the gaming capital of the world, this is The Established Facts. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Established Facts. This is episode 91. I am your host, Big Don, and introducing to my left...
Prime.
Hey, guys, this is Derek.
This is Lance.
I'm Avital.
This is Josh.
This is Dr. Deb.
And we are happy to be with you guys. We are glad that you decided to listen to episode 91. We are nine away from 100 episodes, which is really
impressive, really, actually.
Apparently, angels are singing.
It's even better because it was in stereo.
Right. Well, for you. At least. For me, yeah. It was in mono because I heard it all in my left.
Oh, okay.
We've outlasted Firefly.
Listeners, if you're out there and you want to come, let us know.
Is that really where you had to go?
Bad pride.
We've done more episodes than the Doctors.
No,
we're on track to do more episodes than the Doctors.
Well, we've been doing it for 50 years.
No. Episodes.
Yeah, no.
No.
How many episodes?
They used to be half-hour episodes.
How many episodes?
Classic Who? Well,
Google it.
I'll Google it while you guys talk.
Google it.
I'm kidding.
I want to know.
Supernatural's got more than 100.
Supernatural's
in their 10th season, of course.
There's a lot more seasons.
This gaming podcast brought to you by TV shows.
Amen. And speaking of TV, actually, this for our versus topic, we're going to be discussing console gaming.
But in a
little bit different fashion than what we have in the past. I was recently listening to some other podcast that I will not name.
Completely irrelevant. Completely irrelevant.
Not really. Support all other
podcasts.
Right.
That's right. But they were discussing some retro gaming elements, which I thought was really cool. And so it got me thinking about the old classic games that I used to play on the NES and the SNES and things like that. Yes, Debbie?
As of December 25th, 2014... 813
yeah, we're on track.
Individual
we're
episodes.
On track. We're on track. We're
including one television movie have been aired.
Give us a few more years.
Yeah, we'll know.
When are we getting onto that whole television movie thing?
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll have to
write a script and we'll put something together.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Avital.
Yeah, Avital.
I am not the only writer in this group, Derek.
Write a book and then we can make
the only thing.
She just wants out.
Yeah, she did, but I passed it first, so you get the book.
Right. I have a better idea. I bet you just co-write it.
Oh,
the only thing I've ever written is legal documents. So.
That would be an entertaining script.
We're not acting out a legal document.
That would not be entertaining.
No.
There's nothing about that.
The only thing I've written now is my time card.
If anyone is still listening, this is a gaming podcast. We will get to gaming eventually.
Today we're going to be discussing clerical and administrative modes.
Today we're going to be discussing ADHD.
Everyone's goodbye.
Like, I'm done.
I think this is the first time that I've wanted to walk off the podcast. Right? I just know.
Penguins.
Hurt things. All right, so our versus topic, we will go ahead and start with Dr. Deb. We are talking about vintage games versus new gen games. And to further define that, basically we're drawing a line in a timeline of 40 years of gaming or so, give or take a little bit, in around the 1995 era when things started shifting more to CD-based versus cartridge-based. Online gaming became a thing versus everything being local if you wanted to play multiplayer and things like that. The big players were the PlayStation 1, Sega Saturn, eventually the Sega Dreamcast, things like that, versus your SNES, your N64, Game Boy, even Pong, Atari. So, starting with Deb, vintage games versus new gen games.
Vintage games.
New gen.
Because of the line that you gave me, I'm going to have to go with new gen.
Vintage.
Vintage.
New game.
All right. So, fairly split party. Man.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I think I'm going to. I think I'm going to be the fence sitter for this episode. Oh, it doesn't happen very often.
It doesn't.
But no. I think...
I'm kind of surprised by that.
I think I'm going to have to say both.
Okay. Both, or you can't choose a favorite?
I'm going to say... Well, I mean, I can't choose a favorite between the two because I love them both equally. So, and mostly it's because of the titles.
Fair.
So, for example, since we're on me right now, you know, as the fence sitter, I will at least explain why I'm a fence sitter. Because
the fence is comfy.
It is. No. Today it is.
No, it's really
today
not.
It is. For me.
What kind of fence are you sitting
on? It's got a sofa on the top.
It's the Great Wall of China.
When I was a kid, my dad actually had a Pong system. So we actually started, you know, the proper way when it comes to console gaming. And then we had both Ataris. And then we had an SNES. And then we had an N64. And it just progressed from there. So... So I got a lot of exposure for what a lot of people might consider the classic games, retro games, vintage games, with those consoles. I played the mess out of an Atari. I can't even remember all of the games that we had for Atari because, you know, you buy them at a flea market for $3 a piece or something like that. But then... I really got into a lot of the new gen gaming when I started buying consoles for myself. Obviously, it just kind of progressed, and I've always just had a love for video games. And so, you know, I wanted the newest titles, and I wanted to be able to play with my friends. And then eventually I wanted to play online with other people and things like that. So for me, it's really difficult to choose one over the other because there is such a sentimental value with both. And the transition was just very natural for me to go from one to the other. I can still remember when I was in my early years of high school going over to one of my best friend's house, and we would throw in Quake Arena in his Sega Dreamcast or the original NFL 2K and play for hours and hours and hours with people that were not in the same room as us. And so it was always a lot of fun because you're playing with new people and, you know, you're kind of messaging back and forth. Because I don't remember them having audio team chat
that stuff.
But you could still type in. Like, the Dreamcast came with the hookup for a keyboard. So you could literally, like, it was the most convoluted thing in the world. You had to have a... Like, if you played Quake Arena or something like that and you wanted to actually chat while you played, it was literally a two-player game because somebody was talking smack and somebody was actually playing the game. So it was really... Or if you were playing two-player and somebody wanted to actually comment on something, you'd have to set your controller down in order to actually grab the keyboard and do it.
Real quick, just so people can understand the delineating line, we went with retro versus new gen. We actually drew the line at about 1995 with the release of the Sony PlayStation and the Sega Saturn and ultimately the Nintendo 64. We drew the line there based off of the change... Basically bringing this three-dimensional gaming from the PC to the console and the premise of bringing online multiplayer introduced with the Sega Saturn to the television, which is why I wanted to make sure people understood that our kind of next-gen changeover occurred about the point of the Sega Saturn and PlayStation 1. So
I want to talk to the vintage gamers first, and, you know, because chronologically that's... more appropriate, but
he just called us old.
Mm-hmm.
No, as far as games are concerned, chronologically, it makes sense that you would go first. So for the old people on the podcast,
them's fighting words.
Yeah,
they're words. Sure.
Derek, why vintage over new gen?
This is going to probably get a little bit into our discussion topic.
That's fine.
No, you must be point and concise. I'm just kidding.
So point at you.
Okay. Night, Lance.
So what I really like about vintage games is the replayability.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can put in Mega Man 2 right now, and I can have as much fun with that as I can, like, 10, 15 years ago. I can play Super Mario Bros. 2, Super Mario Bros., Super Mario Bros. 3, and I can get as much enjoyment out of it. when games went into a three-dimensional role, it became harder to replay those games because you're looking at the graphics, and the graphics are very difficult to get. I mean, there's a storyline there, and it's difficult for you to get through into the storyline again if you're looking at old graphics. It's like trying to watch an old movie that may have not had the best production cost. So, I could definitely bring or play King's Quest again, 2, 3, all of them, and just have as much fun. I think that they may have put a little bit more thought into gameplay and a little bit more into storyline than current games, because it seemed like a lot of the more modern games put more thought into visuals rather than story.
Lance.
One of the facts that we've established here is that I'm one of the old guys at the table. So,
yeah, Grandpa.
Retro games for me, vintage games, if you will, just because that's what I started with, to be honest. We've talked about before how I've played console games where you are an asterisk and you're firing at symbols at other asterisks that are different colors just to delineate what the enemy is. But most importantly, without those vintage games, you don't have the current games.
That was my fault. Go ahead.
Okay. So without, you know, the NES Mario Brothers or Super Mario Brothers, you don't get the Wii's version of Super Mario World. Mm-hmm. Without Sega doing their Dreamcast and their early games, you don't get the 3D versions of modern games. And you certainly don't get the controller with, you know, multiple buttons.
Mm-hmm. So. I even put it at, like, if you don't have Zork, then you don't have, like, Drake and Uncharted.
Right. Ooh. Yeah, I started off on a Texas Instrument home computer, which was a keyboard that you connected to your television set that you would plug in cartridges. And the cartridges were either games like Blasto, where it was two tanks, Mortal Kombat style, or you could do your taxes. It's the same cartridge for either one of those. So it was a home computer type system. Then went to the Commodore 64 on 5.0 floppy disks, where you plugged in six of those to play one game. And for that, it was Archon, which is just a chess game, but when pieces take other pieces, again, it goes to a Mortal Kombat tile scenario where your pawn fights against their knight, and whoever wins, wins. And the knight, of course, has more power to it, the pawn, less power, but there's a chance. Or a G.I. Joe game where, you know, you could be Storm Shadow, and you could fight off against Duke. And back and forth, back and forth. And what is it, 8-bit, 6-bit? And it was very slow, but it was fun. But without those, you don't move forward to, you know, your Mortal Kombat's, your Gods Among Us DC game.
All right.
Origins, that's my thing.
Yeah. Deb?
Well, there's two, so I'm trying to figure out which one I start off with. So one of them is, and I think it's just part of my personality, is that I felt like the games, the vintage games, it was far easier to remember what the point of the game was. So in Mario, you're going to save the princess and defeat Bowser. In you know, in Mega Man, you're going to get to the end and you're going to, you know, you're going to
defeat Dr. Wily.
Defeat Dr. Wily, right? Or it gives, yeah, it was always Wily throughout,
yeah,
there.
No,
well, I was going to, yeah, exactly. It did change a couple, but anyway. But you always knew the point. And I feel like in a lot of the modern system games, the open world concept, as cool as it is, I get so stinking lost in what is the point of this game? We're supposed to, are we saving somebody? Are we beating the bad guys? Are we getting the girl? Are we, what? It feels like an ADHD world. Like, all right, we've got 8 different things that we're going to do all at the same time. And I'm like, I don't want to do 8 different things at the same time.
So you shouldn't play Skyrim.
Dear God, no. I would, no. I would probably start yelling, or I'd be like, one more thing, one more person's bugging me to do something else that's not part of this game. Go away. I'm going to shoot you. That's probably what would happen.
Deb doesn't like choices.
Well, I want to know the purpose behind what am I doing. What is my main point? I'm going to stay on track, and part of that is my personality. I am a J. We'll get there later in future episodes. That's my personality.
Hi, J.
Hi. In the Myers-Briggs personalities, I'm a J. So give me a point. So that's one. The other thing that I thought of was going a little bit touching on what Derek said in regards to the replayability. I can still pick up, as he said, Super Mario Brothers 3. I can still pick up Mega Man X. I love Mega Man X. And I can still play it. And I think it's because I was very comfortable. I knew exactly what every button did. I knew exactly what all of his skills were. I knew exactly what he was going to be good at. And I don't feel that's always the case. In many of these games, I feel like I'm starting in square one every time a new game comes out. It's like, okay, am I shooting with X? Am I shooting with this? And I'm trying to get my perspective, and I'm looking down, I'm looking up, I'm looking 360 directions, and now I've got vertigo and I want to puke. What? And so I feel like I knew what the game system could do. I knew what the character could do. And then I knew how to get to the end with that. And I feel like that's something that's lost. So I don't even bother learning a lot of new games because I feel like I've got to relearn every single one. Like, okay, how is the view on this one? Is it first person, second person, third person? What? Am I that character or that character? Hold on. I mean, literally, this is what I do in some of these. Whereas Mega Man, I'm Mega Man and I am moving and, okay. I feel like there's more. I don't get as lost. I'll be honest. I don't get as lost as I get in modern games.
Avital, why did you choose the new gen stuff?
Well, I guess really kind of because of the specific line that we drew. For me, like, the first console that I ever really played on was the N64, and the line that we have drawn, the N64 is on the new gen side of that line. Because that was, like I said, the first console I played on, and I mean, you know, I loved Super Mario Kart, Gauntlet Legends. I don't know. Yellow Valkyrie needs food badly. And all that. And I like playing Mario Kart on the 64 because occasionally I could actually beat my little brother. You know, and
yeah,
like,
I never could.
Yeah. Like Paper Mario, stuff like that. I liked that game. I liked that game a lot. So since the N64 is on the new side of the line, and that was the first one I played, I don't really have experience with the older ones. I mean, you know, I've played Xbox and some, like, PlayStation 2, and, you know, I own half of a Xbox 360.
Hopefully it's at least the hard drive.
Yeah, really.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it lives in my brother's room anyway, but technically I can use it whenever I want, and I'm allowed to say, no, you can't take that out of the house to your friend's house.
Fair enough.
Although he has a Xbox One now, so it doesn't really matter.
So now you own a whole Xbox 360.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Offer him $50 for it. Then it's yours.
Yeah. I can still play it anyways whenever I want.
Yeah, okay.
I don't play it that much. I don't know. Fable 2 is one of my favorites.
Ah, Fable.
Oh, Fable.
See, Fable 1, I've only played, like, 20 minutes or something.
Avital,
oh, yeah.
But
have you heard of a game called Oregon Quest?
You're thinking
Oregon Trail.
Oregon Trail on the computer?
Yes.
Thank you.
Of course.
Like,
I loved
Oregon
that game.
Quest.
Your party has died of dysentery.
Of dysentery, yes!
That game was awesome.
Yes, it was!
That game was made in, like, the 80s.
No.
And people still are talking about it.
Oh, there's a new version
Oregon
of that.
Trail?
It's the zombie version called Oregon Trail.
Really?
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's more fun.
That's hilarious.
I can't tell if you're being serious.
No, I'm dead serious. Literally.
Well, see, I wouldn't.
Then wouldn't you be undead serious?
Like, yeah,
no.
Almost dead.
I would not want to play that game.
Almost
because,
dead serious.
I really, really cannot stand zombies.
Neither can
zombies.
Neither can Lance.
No, okay.
Not a big fan.
I love zombies.
But this game, they're pixels.
I don't care.
So, no,
I don't like zombies.
I don't mind them.
Anyway, but
They never did me wrong.
We're talking about consoles. Oregon Trail was like on computer, right?
To my knowledge, I don't think there was an Oregon Trail for a console.
It's an app game.
There was for
that's
Nintendo.
Exciting,
that's
dog.
There was for Nintendo.
Yeah, there was
a whole
for
other conversation.
There was one for Nintendo.
Okay,
but most of what I've played is in our line of new gen consoles. Pretty much the high majority of what I have played
is right at the bottom end of it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, or newer too.
Okay, I gotcha.
I really like the N64 a lot. So.
Oh, I'm so ready to respond.
Go for it.
Okay,
you and me both.
Fire away.
So number one, I will state as well that most of my experiences come on the other side of our line, our defined line, but I did grow up...
You kid.
Hey, such I grew kid. Up with a Nintendo, Super Nintendo as well. I had both of them over time, so...
I am, I think, the youngest one here.
Yeah, I know.
By a slightly bit.
Very slightly
so.
Bit.
Very
yes.
slight bit. So
that's okay, because I'm the second youngest. So,
let me go put my teeth back in.
My walker's in the other room.
I do have
let me get my prune juice.
I do have to question you.
I guess
love.
I'm middle-aged then, because I'm like
Deb, I have
right
to question
middle.
You, because for someone who said they need a game that has a point, why in the world do you put so much time in The Sims?
There is a point to The Sims.
What's the point?
To drain hours and hours
to
and
not...
hours of life out of you without you ever really knowing.
Make sure that they don't die from their own stupidity, because they're on their own, they do die. Like, they just, like, lie there and don't do anything.
Just like real life.
Except they don't have a real freedom of choice.
Okay, I bring that up. So there's a point to you.
Yeah, there's a point. Yeah. I want to make them successful. They need to be at the top of their jobs, have four kids that are all picture perfect, and all go to school.
All of
themselves.
It's open world. Granted, it's your own little world.
Right,
but
that's
still
the
open.
Difference, Josh, because like in a game like Skyrim, you've got like people running up to you every
all
like,
of which you
10
can
minutes.
Ignore.
Yeah, but do you think Deb can ignore that?
No, you can't. I mean, I understand, because now you've got a personality differentiation
yes.
there. But see, this is where the problem for me, the reason why I lean more towards next gen, and it's based off the games that I have played, and I know there are other games that can provide this. Mm-hmm. I can honestly say that on the retro or vintage side of the line, mm-hmm. I have not had an emotional connection to the character that I'm playing.
You are lying.
No, I'm not.
Uh-oh.
You're not a feeler.
No, it's not that. On the next gen, I have had the emotional connection to characters on the next gen set of games. Yes, I have. Ask Derek. Derek watched it. I freaking cried during The Last of Us.
Oh, yeah.
Cry, baby.
But you didn't feel an emotional connection to Link? You didn't get an
Never
emotional connection?
Never played the Zelda games.
What?
I said that. I said that it very well.
I'm sorry,
I could
I'm
lie down
heart.
To that.
Okay.
I'm
gonna breathe.
Debbie's having heart palpitations.
Now, that being said, her brothers, especially big fans of the Metal Gear games.
Okay? Don't tell Chris he didn't get an emotional connection to Metal Gear.
I'm getting
he will
there.
Hurt you.
I'm getting there. But the first Metal Gear game I played, Metal Gear Solid 2, was on the PlayStation, on the right side of the line. You see what I mean? My emotional connections did not come from. Mario, you fell down a freaking hole, and then when you came back, you were the same Mario. It's not like you lost.
No, you weren't. You were little.
Oh. Or you
oh
lost
my
your firepower.
Gracious. What?
But that's what I'm saying. The fact that Mario would make it to the end of the world and the princess was not there. I was not mad for Mario. I was annoyed because of all the work I just put in. I was not mad for Mario. I was mad for myself. And then, whereas if you reach the end of these more episodic, these story-driven, these almost movie-driven games that are showing up in next-gen games, you've spent all this time as this character, especially in a first-person situation where you're seeing it from their eyes. You are now experiencing what they are experiencing. I very much get emotionally attached to that. So for anyone who tries to say they don't put a story behind it, you're out of your mind. Huh?
I cried at watching the end of Halo 4, and I wasn't even the one playing.
Amen.
It was so sad.
Replayability, I actually won't disagree for certain games. Especially like Uncharted. I'll probably never go back and play Uncharted. I've loved that game. It was one of the best storylines I've ever played. But I have picked up next-gen copies of sports games. Mm-hmm. I have that. Heck, even there are next-gen side-scroller games that are out now. That like when the PlayStation 4 released, there was a game that came out called oh, I don't even remember the name of it right now. Oh, no, PlayStation 3 had one called Stardust. Mm-hmm. It was very much Galaga, okay, but almost in a 3D type world. Very arcade style, had a very high replayability. Not mm-hmm. for me, per se, because I'm not into those types of games. But in terms of replayability, that came down to the developer. There are plenty of replay. I don't know how many times Don and Josh have played Halo. Like, I don't even know
how many times I've played Halo.
But there,
you never play a game again, though. I kind of have to agree with Derek. I never play a game
that has a story again.
Right.
I don't. But I will pick up a game that's got
unless it's got variations in the story.
But even then, I very rarely do it. Once I choose my path, I've done my path.
I can't tell you how many times I've played Mass Effect.
But see, Mass Effect's a next-gen game.
Right.
BioWare giving you that choice, that option. Dragon Age, I'm still about halfway through that game of Inquisition. And when I finish it, I'll probably be done. You can play that game 20 more times, 20 different ways. But I don't think there's 20 different ways you beat Mario one way.
And it always works.
Yep.
Well, sometimes you go for the secret levels.
But that's
true.
That doesn't
Star levels on the Super Nintendo, Super Mario World. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So now it comes down to how you define replayability.
The flutes.
Replayability is if you want to play it again.
Right now, let's say 5 years later.
Okay.
Would you pick up any of these next-gen games again?
I doubt it because I move on to the next, because I'm the type of person who moves on to the next generation of games. That's why. It has nothing to do with the previous game. It has everything to do with I like being on the bleeding edge of gaming.
Okay.
I don't have a problem admitting that. If someone picks up Halo mm-hmm. on the Xbox, mm-hmm. the original Xbox, mm-hmm. if someone actually had an original Xbox in front of me with Halo on it, I would probably play it. At least the multiplayer element of it. In terms of the story, I couldn't care less. I beat that story once already. That was me. I know many others who will play it again and can play it again because it gets more difficult. That increased difficulty makes people want to do it again. It gives them that challenge. Mm. It comes down to what is it you want out of the game. I got more out of the next generation of gaming than I got out of the old gen. And that's why I don't want... I love my wife. The Sims. This whole time, I'm sitting there going, "What is the point of the Sims? I don't see it."
Right.
But that doesn't make it any less of a good game. It's a console. It's PC. It's been on console.
Right.
But, and it's next generation.
Valid.
It is based off our delineating lines.
It is,
Deb.
It is. I don't think about it though in the same way that I think about Skyrim. I don't see it as being
They're two different games.
Yeah.
They are, but...
They are.
You got an open world argument.
Quite literally.
Two different games.
Different companies, Fraxis and...
Worlds.
Everything.
Prime.
All right. So, I've got several...
Come on, reach up through your mic. It's all right. Don't be afraid of it.
I've got several reasons why I like the new gen over the older consoles. One of them has to do with technology in general. I love wireless controllers. That's
Amen.
The most obvious one. Like, I don't want to sit here and be 10 or 6 feet away from a 80-inch television screen because the controller won't reach.
So the ability to be lazy is your number one factor.
The ability to be able to sit across a room and play a game instead of being right up there next to the console is one reason why. Another reason has to do with storyline. I feel like, as much as Derek said that the newer games focus on graphics, yes, they do focus on graphics, but they also do focus a lot more on storyline than like previous original games.
I challenge you to play Zork and say that.
Okay, play Skyrim. There's plenty of storyline in that.
Not really.
There's a whole history behind everything that's going on in there.
Okay. How about this? Elder Scrolls series. How about that?
Even Skyrim, you could spend hours reading books to get the history of the...
I would agree with
that. It's ridiculous.
I agree with that, but when you're playing the game and you're doing the same missions over and over again, just different characters, that don't really have an effect. Like... You have to help this merchant go from point A to point B so he doesn't get killed.
Well,
or are you...
You're not playing the storyline missions. I will say that the Skyrim, there is so much non-story mission.
You can lead a revolution.
When I heard somebody play Elder Scrolls Oblivion, before I picked it up and already put 240 hours into it, I know he was doing more than just a story.
Right.
But 240 hours and he still hasn't beat the game?
Yeah, you can lead a revolution and that's not even part of the main plot at all. I'm just saying.
There's got to be better ways to waste my time in life.
But then there's also games that are more direct, that like Uncharted or like the new Tomb Raider that I've played, that are straight, like, there's a little bit of side questy stuff for the Tomb Raider, but it's more optional than...
A straight up freight train.
Yeah, I literally beat it in a week, so, and the storyline was awesome. So I would say I prefer the storyline of newer gen games than the older gen. I prefer the technology of, you know, having the wireless controllers and having even like the Wii U or the Kinect or something like that. You know, that's kind of fun sometimes. Or even Rock Band, because they've got, what, instruments that you can play now and stuff like that. That, like, the closest thing they came to was Duck Hunt and the Nintendo glove thing. I don't know what that
power
thing...
Glove.
Yeah, power the glove. Power
the glove.
Glove
thing. Yeah.
Oh, the says the old glove. Guy.
So it was, I mean, the advance in technology is drastically changed in comparison to what it used to be, and that's why I prefer newer gen consoles because of that. So I think that's good for now.
Lance?
You know what I'm realizing is the giant delineator here is arcades.
Mm-hmm.
For Prime's example, he never had to get his gaming fix by standing in front of a game. He's always had the ability to play in front of a television set. For the storyline folk, you could play a storyline, but you'd eventually run out of quarters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those of us that kind of like the older gamings, we're kind of fixed on that. That's the way that we used to play. The only way we used to be able to play was pump quarter after quarter or token after token. Depending.
Pizza joints.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Versus now, the younger generation, it's hard to even find an arcade these days.
Yep.
You have to go to a place that's either made for it,
right,
or it's one small section of a bowling alley or a movie theater.
Right.
You know, you don't go there specifically to play these games and socialize with other people that do that.
Right.
I mean, I remember playing, this isn't technically console, but pinball machines, and
oh,
how much I love playing pinball machines. And it just... I don't know, it's that tactile feel of seeing something like physically there and you can move it.
I mean, I think, you know, and again, kind of being the fence sitter, and maybe I should have waited to go last, because I think you guys have all brought up a lot of really good points that play to the strength of both styles of gaming. I think you hit the nail right on the head when it comes to vintage style gaming, Lance. I think that, you know, I can remember being a kid and going to arcades, and there were a lot of arcades. There was an arcade in every mall. There was an arcade. There was two or three arcades downtown. Every time you went to a fair, whether it was a county fair or a state fair, there was an arcade there that was put together in a big tent, and you could spend hours in there, you know, with just a roll of quarters. I can remember standing in front of the original Marvel X-Men 6-player console game with my uncle at a putt-putt golf for literally 3 hours. And I'm pretty sure we spent $25 to $30 worth of quarters in that game to beat the whole thing and get to the end and beat Magneto, and then for it to go, all right, now try it on a higher difficulty. And you're like, no, God! You know, and you start on the very first level all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is, though they kind of tie in. So, I mean, if you played like the original Street Fighter game and stuff like that, like, they try and tie in some sort of story link to it. Mortal Kombat is the same way. Like there is story if you want to look for it. I mean, even in the Mario games, there's a purpose why Mario is in the Mushroom Kingdom trying to save the princess. Like, you know, there is a story behind it. But I think that what I enjoy about those vintage-style, classic-style games is definitely the replayability, where I can, you know, if I just want to crank out half an hour, 45 minutes of games and feel like I've actually achieved something,
thank you,
then, you know, I'll throw on some Super Nintendo and kick on my Super Mario Brothers and play a game with my 5-year-old, because he totally loves it, and it's awesome. And so, you know, we'll play that for 30, 45 minutes, beat 5 or 6 levels, actually feel like I've achieved something, and then turn it off, because I don't have to worry about auto, you know, I don't have to worry about auto saves and stuff like that. I mean, you know, save and quit. Boom. Okay, done. Turn it off, walk away. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas new stuff, 45 minutes is not nearly enough time to really get into the story. But I think that, you know, what I love about the newer stuff is the amount of calculated content that they put in those games to keep your attention. I don't ever remember growing up when you had kids playing anything before a Nintendo 64 where they would literally be on it for more than an hour or two.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no.
Pac-Man fever was a thing. Sir.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying, for me, I did not experience that because I was outside playing or I was, you know, I was doing stuff.
I was
stuff.
On a Game Boy, like original, like black and white Game Boy. My parents took, like, time-lapse pictures of me. Mm-hmm. I didn't move for, like, 3 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, maybe that's just me.
My parents used to get scared because they would leave us at our cousin's house who had a Nintendo, and they'd be out, whatever, and we'd be on it. They were gone for 4 or 5 hours, and we were all in just about the same positions when they came back. And they were like, have you moved? Even go to the bathroom? Well, and we're like, we can't remember.
Just me then. Maybe that's just the way I play games. Okay, I can't do that.
Yeah,
so.
Okay.
I think the older games versus the newer ones, too, at the same time. The newer ones, I think... there was a point that I was trying to get to.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Give me a minute.
Okay, I got one more thing.
Go for it.
Versus to kind of put in the old games counter, and it's difficulty. And I'm going to get a lot of stuff for this from the new age gamers, and I'm okay. I'm ready for it.
You're right.
But here's the thing, and I'm going to kind of go back to the arcade for a little bit of this. I have some points here, and I'd like to talk about them all. And I'm happy to take comment. So, first of all, controllers. Modern gaming, you have either the PlayStation controller, the Xbox controller, or, if you're fun, the Wii controller.
Mm-hmm. Well, this could be anything. But...
right. So, when I was growing up, back in my day, you had a button and maybe a joystick. Or if you were playing one of the harder games, Asteroids, you had a rollerball.
Or
and tried to control that.
Centipede. Or if you were playing Pong, it was just a little thing you turned.
Right. So, I think the controllers... And the way to control the game has evolved into something that is a lot easier to do. Granted, there are more buttons, and those buttons can be pressed in different combinations to do different things. But once you memorize that, you got it down.
Unless you're trying to do a fireball action, then you...
Hadouken. Yeah.
Hadouken.
Totally. But once you get that down, it's done. Trying to maneuver Pac-Man away from ghosts, that was difficult for a lot of people.
Yeah. Amen, and, brother.
I'm sorry, running away from pirates in the... The Drake game is still just as difficult. You're running away. Yes, you are. Right. There is crap in your way everywhere.
But you're pressing a directional pad or you're maneuvering a joystick in a certain way. Whereas we would just roll that ball and hope for the best.
I actually don't disagree on the well, I've never played a Pac-Man arcade that didn't have a joystick.
Okay, well, that was just an example.
Well, right. And I got you on the, was it, what'd you say? Galaga, that was the joystick? I mean, the rollerball?
Asteroids.
Yeah, Asteroid. That.
Breakout.
I've actually played an Asteroid arcade with the rollerball. Props to whoever got the high score.
The modern version of that is like the Golden Tee game where you're doing the rollerball. But think about all the different controllers. I mean, Tron had its own controller.
Oh my gosh.
Spy Hunter had its own controller. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a wheel, but it had buttons on it. Mm-hmm. And you had to figure out what those buttons did. Because another thing of difficulty was... Older games didn't give you the premise of the game or lead you through it, saying,
Okay, now get to this choke point.
It's on Super Mario Brothers 2, they throw you into the game, climb that mountain.
Another difficulty.
Figure out what to do.
Yeah. Another difficulty of the older games,
Contra,
which is why I prefer the newer ones, is because of the timing issues. Like, if you're hitting the A button to try and attack something, you don't actually attack it until you're halfway down health because it's beating whatever you're fighting is beating you up. Versus the newer games, it's a lot more accurate to when you hit the button.
But I think that you bring up a good point. Because like Super Mario Brothers, you got hit once if you're tiny and you're dead.
Yeah.
You didn't get to take 17,000 hits and get down to 10%.
Exactly. You didn't.
You
see
were little.
The
red you had one life. Scoop. You better play smart and clean to get through 8/1 in Super Mario Brothers, the original, when you're little. And I did it. And you had this moment of, oh my gosh, I got through that whole level. I didn't get hit once.
But then you're dealing with a realism versus game issue there. And
I've played Dark Souls. I mean, it's newer.
Hold on.
I'm with you there.
Realism of what, sir?
Well, first off, it's really a walking little mushroom going to kill Mario. Like, I understand falling down a freaking... you know, into a hole. A I get mushroom. That, but yeah, the Goomba is a little, I mean,
Goomba.
I know it is, but he runs into a Goomba and he dies versus the realism of getting shot. Now, that being said, they have made it a lot easier on games where you're not like point blank taken out like in Battlefield, because I've played the Battlefield games and one shot, you're done.
Well, and that's how it was with Rainbow Six too.
Right.
So
they've presented that, but they've also tried to find a balance.
I don't want to get into this with you, but I've seen people that have been shot once and they died.
Yeah, okay, no, I get that's real.
That would traumatize
I get
people.
That, but that's... Nugent is trying to take an approach of some realism balanced with difficulty, and whereas a lot of the other games were just for fun. The vintage games were meant for a fun atmosphere, and that's... I'm not saying that they're wrong in either way, but if you're drawn to next gen because it looks more real, and yet you get mad when you play something that's too real, your kind of argument's a little null and void.
I disagree with about more fun, because I have to tell you, I never sweat so hard in my life as when I tried to get through 8-2 in Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, when you're trying to make those jumps?
Yes.
Yes.
You have to get the speed up and jump at just the right second to be able to make that big canyon. I was not in this is fun. It's like, I have to make this jump, otherwise I'm dead.
And that comes to my next point. It is
Zumba.
This is your wife. Look what you have done.
The classic games versus modern games, they taught you strategy through trial and error instead of just getting through it and pushing buttons.
Well, and they had progressive difficulty. Like, it started out easy, and they showed you, you know, okay, if you, you know, this is how you jump, this is how you run, this is, you know, these are bad guys, these are good guys. And then later, as the game went on, it got harder and harder and harder based on the level that was built for it and things like that.
And you had the same amount of time to do the same thing. You had 300 seconds. Good luck.
Well, I think one way that they solved the difficulty level is if you want more difficulty nowadays, you just play multiplayer online and then get beat by 7-year-olds all day long. I'm just saying.
But multiplayer online is a completely different arena for gameplay. We're talking about, like, as you get further and further in the storyline, for example, Halo. If you play Halo on Legendary, you're experiencing the same bad guys in the beginning of the game as you do at the end of the game. Therefore, there is no real curve when it comes to the difficulty of the bad guys.
You're just fighting more of them.
Yeah, you're just fighting more of them. Whereas in Super Mario Brothers or Super Mario World, the puzzles get harder as you progress. The action gets more difficult. The timing
is
more difficult.
The Hammer Brothers even get harder.
Right.
And bad guy gets a little bit harder.
All of that same stuff was applied in the Resident Evil series. And I know that you're starting to see that more and more, especially in the story-driven things that... Yeah, you may start... It may say it starts on casual, but by the time it's done, you've reached a normal difficulty. If you start on normal, you'll reach a hard difficulty by the time it's done. They do get progressively more difficult, depending on, you know, the game and how the game was made. I know that the Drake series you were dealing with a lot more bad guys. They were a lot more accurate. They're wearing more armor. They were a lot smarter as you got further into the game.
Here's a question. Do you feel like after getting through Uncharted that you feel like you've accomplished something instead of I just finished a great movie?
But see, I think that by being Drake in that story, I have accomplished what I set out to do that just so happened to be a great movie as well.
Right, but do you feel like you have to, that you were challenged to the point where, like, there was times that, you know what, this is going to go south, like, in a split second.
For the most part, yes. In that particular series, yes. I have told this story before, and the Lord of the Rings, The Third Age, which has given a lot of grief for being just this silly side story to the whole Lord of the Rings storyline, which I suggest anyone play, because it's a fun, neat little... You're a fellowship following the fellowship. At the very end of the game, totally beat the Eye of Sauron in 2 rounds. It was Final Fantasy style. And so sometimes there's not as much of a payoff. And that's a next-gen game. The payoff is not always great. I did find out that there's the Far Cry 4 game that just came out. There's a way to beat the game in 10 minutes. All you have to do is wait on the balcony. But they did that because they wanted to. No one does that. Most of the time, if I know that I've invested my way all the way to the end of the game, I feel like the payoff's been worth it. But if I don't feel like the payoff is going to be worth it, mm-hmm. that game, I will stop playing the game. So Assassin's Creed, I know you guys love the game. Black Flag was near impossible for me to, like, where I'm at right now, I'm like, you're not telling me what I need to do to move forward. You're telling me that I should not take this next story mission because I'm not powerful enough for it. Well, then what do I need to do?
Grind.
Yeah, see? I don't do well in grind games. I love story games, but I don't do well with grind.
See, I think I love grind games, and I think that's part of the reason why I like some of the newer gen, because a lot of newer gen, even for PC, I know we're just talking about consoles, but even for PCs, grinding, you're doing a lot of grinding in general, so... Yeah.
And that's another thing about difficulty that I can get into is in modern games, for example, the Diablo 3 game mm-hmm. that we play quite often, you can be any level and play that game versus if you're Metroid. That's all you can do. You can only power up your weapons. But in Diablo 3, you can be at 70 level with 70 Paragon playing at the very first beginner level of the first mission of Act 1.
Mm-hmm.
So... In the older games, you had what you had, mm-hmm. and that's all you had going forward.
Right. Mario, the most powerful you would ever be with Mario is if you had a fire flower and you had a star. That was it. At 8-4 and 1-1, that was it. And so you had to figure out how to beat the entire game with just that. So I thought that you had to be a little more... You didn't have the option to be cheesed. You were only what you were. And so it forced you to get better with your skills in the game. And to be able to get your timing exactly right and get your aiming exactly right to be able to beat those levels. As opposed to, it seems like some of these other games, if you can just smash buttons fast enough, doesn't really matter what combination, or just avoid the situation entirely. Or, you know, there's easier ways to get around it, whereas you had to jump that gap in 8-2 to beat the game. And so...
I think that's just, it varies depending on the game. There are a lot of games that are pretty cut and dry, pretty simple, like Star Wars Force Unleashed. I beat that game in 4 hours.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know what you mean about there are some newer gen games that are... But at the same time, there are older gen games that really aren't that great either.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, E.T.
I mean, yeah. E.T. We don't talk about E.T. That never happened.
Yeah, I'm with him. I deny all knowledge of the incident.
Yes, so did Atari.
Yeah, that's smart. Oh, anyway.
And the last thing I want to talk about difficulty is save points. In our games, we didn't have those. Nope. There was no respawning in the middle. I mean, sometimes there were. But very rarely was there a respawn. You played it until you were done. You turned it off. You started over from the very beginning.
Our save point was we had to memorize a grid of dots in my command.
Or you left the system on for days.
Oh, yes.
Yes, you did. And you prayed that it wouldn't overheat.
Check up your energy bill.
Yes.
The light is flashing when you come home from school. And
you're just crying.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Or you had to write down that series of letters in Mega Man. It was the 16-letter A5QS, whatever. Exactly. And so I'm writing it down, and then all of a sudden the next day you're like, wait, was that a B or was that a 3? Yeah. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Did I write it down right?
I have no idea if they ever fixed this, but Microsoft's Halo 4 did not have autosave in it when it first came out.
Oh, that's so funny.
That's
and
hilarious.
I know both Mike and I never finished the game because I put in 3 hours. Mike put in almost 8. And because it didn't save, my Xbox,
you were like, I'm done with
it. It saves from chapter to chapter.
That's just it. I know we were okay. Okay, that's fair.
That's the story of Skyrim for me. Just saying,
Skyrim has saving.
Yeah,
if you beat a mission, you're walking through the middle of a tunnel and you get hit in the face by some sort of undead creature and die,
killed by a woolly mammoth,
those
are my favorite.
And you forget
to
save.
Walk around the corner,
and
you're smashed by a zombie. You're like.
Great! I'm glad the Draugr have good stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
Jerks.
Yep.
Go ahead, Derek.
I'd like to bring up bugs, like
the movie. It was terrible.
Entomologically?
No. Software bugs.
Quirks. Oh, the software quirks where you could get through areas by doing just the right thing. It's a certain button combination
bugs
in a certain place.
Bugs existed in Nintendo games, too.
You mean,
no, they didn't.
Oh, they did?
There were a couple. There are a couple in Nintendo.
You mean cheats?
No. They got referred
game
to as
genie.
You too.
Game genie.
No.
I'm
not
just
even talking
lay
about
that
game
out.
Genie.
No. I understand.
There is
Contra.
If you YouTube it, there is a
99
quirk
lives.
In Well, for example, I don't know. Or do you call this a quirk? Maybe you don't call this a quirk. Okay. The ability to get the 99 lives in Super Mario Brothers by jumping on the green shell, and if you kept jumping over and over and over again.
That's not a bug. A bug.
That's not a bug. Okay.
What I would consider a bug would be in Skyrim,
walking through a mountain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Walking through a mountain,
not a boulder, the whole mountain.
Or deformed characters, or
Assassin's Creed Unity, where faces didn't generate, but the muscle did.
Ew.
But you're assassin, so you're not supposed to have your face memorized anyway. So it's actually working to your benefit.
That's true.
But I'll tell you the reason why that was. They had no way of patching them when they went out in the field.
Yeah, that's true.
Nowadays, they can patch those bugs. If a bug gets found in the next generation games, they can patch them.
Yeah,
they can't do that with the previous gen. There was no way to do it. It's not like, I'm sorry, it was bad. We're going to ship you a whole other one. That ain't going to happen.
Well, no, I got that. But it seems like more and more games are coming out with bugs these days.
I think it's because they can afford to do so.
Look at the time.
The amount of patches and stuff that they can release.
Look at the time that they spend. For example, Assassin's Creed.
Mm-hmm.
They released Assassin's Creed 3,
mm-hmm.
and then they released Black Flag, and then they released Rogue
and
Unity at the same time. And now they're talking about the next one.
If you notice,
they have released these games within
their annual releases.
Yeah, annual releases. Whereas when Atari, SNES, NES, whatever, there were years between.
I mean,
Mario Brothers 1, Mario Brothers 2, and Mario Brothers 3.
Mm-hmm.
There were years. I mean, it may have only been a couple years, but the fact of the matter was they played it, they tested it, they made sure that everything, all the programming was written correctly.
Oh, what a great concept.
Well, but there was not the push from the publishers to release a game annually.
You also didn't have, 1.5, 2 billion people across the world playing video games at that time.
True.
Nowadays, there's a huge mass market for video game entertainment.
Especially because of the internet.
And we are all entitled to have the opportunity to have, a new game every 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 months.
A crappy game every 2 to 3 to 5 months.
No, they're not all crappy.
They're not all crappy. Well, that's encouraging.
Not every SNES and NES game was a hit either.
Which company does not ship games until they're done?
BioWare.
Yeah. Well, that's because it takes them freaking forever to integrate all of the possibilities into their games.
I think BioWare is probably one of the most well known for. We're just going to take forever to release a game.
Yeah.
But
they come out with quality stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good stuff.
That would not have happened. Like EA, when they purchased BioWare, a lot of people were concerned that EA was going to push them down the Madden route.
Because EA's notorious for that.
EA's sports division releases a new game every year, and the reason they do it is because seasons change, players change, and it's an opportunity to make money off of it. And so far, because it's a sports game, there are only so many bugs that are going to show up.
Yeah, you keep
games.
The same mechanic engine and you just change the names.
Right. So,
and the way they look.
But something like when BioWare was purchased by EA, part of that agreement was don't touch our house.
Mm.
We're going to release when we release. We're asking you to come in as a financial backer so we can get a bigger push behind us.
Mm-hmm.
So Dragon Age Inquisition, a BioWare game, is one of the best games rated in the last year. There were a few bugs.
Right,
nothing like completely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Shadow of Mordor was a Warner Brothers game. A lot of people were concerned about that because they had just done Batman Arkham City.
Mm.
They took Shadow of Mordor and made it one of the top games because they took basically the mechanic that was Arkham City with a little bit of Assassin's Creed, put this whole new storyline behind it and put it out there and made a fantastic game. You can release quality annual games. Even Ubisoft has had to come out with their Assassin's Creed games and go, we made a mistake. Mm-hmm. Like, they have directly said they made a mistake. They gave away the season pass to people that had bought it because of the issues they were having. It was if you were within a certain time frame or whatever, you got the season pass included.
Yeah, because they've fixed all those by now.
Exactly.
It's just a DLC.
So, it's... I'm with you. Don't get me wrong. I think that they should be using a better software development cycle, but a lot of that comes down to the big name company behind them. Somebody like Naughty Dog, the ones that have been doing Uncharted, Last of Us, they're getting ready to do an Uncharted 4. They've got about a 3-year cycle between games. So what did they do this last year when their publisher was like, we need a new game from it? Remaster The Last of Us and re-release it on the next-gen console. It'll sell just as well as it did on the last-gen. Mm-hmm. And it did. It's the same game. It's just running at 1080p at 60 frames a second. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with any one of those points, to be completely honest.
Do you have a decision with the versus topic yet? Or are you just going to stay on the fence?
No, I'm going to stay on the fence because I think you guys have all brought valid points to the actual discussion when it comes to the versus topic. I have always been a very open experience gamer, and I find quality in all of it for whatever it's built. Like I said, I enjoy sitting down and playing Assassin's Creed for hours on end, playing Halo, and you know, making that connection with Cortana and Chief, and sitting down and playing, you know, Mario Brothers with my kids and my wife. It's one of Mario Brothers 3 is one of my my wife and I's favorite video games to play together because it's just fun. I have made this comment before. I have never, ever, ever, ever in my life played a game that made me so mad and continued to want to play it.
Yes.
Than Mario 3. That game drives me crazy.
Yes, but you love it despite it. You always pick it up again.
In spite of it. In spite of that game.
You always pick it up again. Yes. To me, that's a good game. That's true.
But then when it goes to the modern consoles, all the Mario games become shared Mario games.
Yeah.
They're friendship killer games.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Well, which unless you allow your wife to just sit and play it on her own, and then it's not as bad.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. Because, like, I have not minded playing any time with her. There was even a point she'd ask me to jump in Mario 3D World, the most recent one that came out, just to help her get through a few of the stages because the way they designed it.
Exactly. So that's another little point that I want to put in there. It drove me bananas. And you didn't see the 10 times I went through that level to try to do it alone.
I saw 5 of them.
Right. Okay, fair enough. It drove me bananas that I had to have somebody's help to do it. Because in my mind, this is a Mario game. There should be a way for me to do this alone. It may be stupid and ridiculous and require me to do 8 different variations to try to find it. I should be able to do it. If a Mario game requires me to have a friend to help me, I don't like it.
But that's what we're used to when we play those classic games is there is a way to get through
this. Right, I can
figure
do this
it
on
out.
My own.
There's
right,
not, like,
it.
The game's not going to tell you, okay, the thing you're looking for is over there. Go in that direction.
There is no shiny yellow path.
We're going to jump on top of blocks until we figure it out, or we're going to duck under this hole. And, ooh, look, there's the one little area that we can crawl through that we can get to the next level.
Exactly.
Or I can put this bomb in this wall, and it'll open up the secret passage that I can go through. And
But, I mean, if I can say this, one of the most popular websites on the internet right now is Facebook, which is a social networking site, which is the entire direction that most games are going, which is social gaming.
Yeah.
So I understand that. I'm not saying for every crowd it's the bee's knees, but what I'm saying is the reason that they engineer games to be able to go online. Assassin's Creed Unity is a perfect example. Not only can you go online and play competitively, but you can literally play 4 people online campaign. And, you know, there are things that you do throughout that game that, you know, if you have help with, obviously things are going to be a lot less difficult than if you are running the campaign by yourself.
Therein lies the difference between what she's saying and what you're saying. You said the word can. She said the word must.
Okay,
but I don't... I bet if we looked up, there's a way to do it by yourself with that game.
There are certain
bonus things, like the stars or whatever you could only collect with multiplayer.
Yeah.
Sadly, that's very common with if it has a multiplayer option, there are certain things that you have to have the multiplayer element to get.
And that's just don't like. For example, in Super Mario World and Super Nintendo, there were all of the little things to get until you got the final star, which said you got every single thing in this entire game. You could do that alone. because Chris and I spent hours and figured out how to do it all alone with nobody's help. I like
that. You
couldn't
play Super Mario World simultaneously. You had to still tag
either
out.
That's true.
Yeah. Right.
That's what makes this different, is now that you're able to play simultaneously.
You're playing at the exact same time.
They're trying to find a way to reward you for playing with the new technology that they're trying to push.
Yeah, and the Wii system is all social. Mm. But the Wii U in particular was about, we still want to be social, but also focus on you with the new controller. That was their whole tagline.
What do you guys think of a game like, for example, Mario Kart, which was born on the early version, because it was born in Super Nintendo.
Uh-huh.
But now it has come over into Wii U.
Yeah,
now,
Mario Kart Wii U is one of the best-selling games in Nintendo's history.
No, I agree. But why is it that... that's not my point. It's the concept of it is an old-school... All it is a racing game, and it's very hard. It's a very simple thing. How has it survived the transition between old-school into new-school?
The characters.
The characters.
People love the characters.
Mm-hmm. And the premise of a battle-driven racing game. The premise of Mario Kart,
the goofy battle,
exactly.
It's the yeah.
Because Sonic and what is it? Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing, similar premise, where the idea that you're a ground, air, or sea item switching back and forth in between was straight up came from the Mario Kart division. There was a PlayStation, Little Big Planet karting, Mod Nation Racers. This idea of being able to do a goofy competitive racing, because without Mario Kart, things like that wouldn't have happened.
Also, what is the party?
Mario Party?
The Mario Party games?
Mario Party?
No, the one where they're battling each other.
Super Smash Brothers.
Smash Brothers, yeah.
So, again, it's
a gimmicky battle.
Those games, like, because when you were playing Super Mario Kart on the Super Nintendo, the first one, it was multiplayer because it was two-player,
mm-hmm.
above and below.
Mm-hmm.
And that premise just continued forward.
Originally came out of the original Mario Brothers.
Right.
Because
original Mario Brothers.
Where you're both trying to get to Donkey off the top.
Donkey Kong.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Donkey Kong.
The one where they're
in
the pipes down below the city with the crabs and the...
And you could actually play... It was two-player.
And that was why it was exciting. You could actually have two going at the same time.
And I forget if it was Luigi or if it was just a different Mario that you played against...
I think it was the actual... I think it was Luigi.
It was Mario and Luigi.
I think
it was Luigi.
Yeah, I think it was both.
However, they looked identical with different colors.
Right, right.
It's true.
It wasn't until, Super Nintendo... I don't know.
No.
Yeah, no, it wasn't until Super Nintendo.
It was Super Mario Bros. 2.
Super Mario Bros. 2.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry. Because Super Mario 3, even Luigi looked very similar. He was just tall.
And then Super Mario Brothers, they looked literally exactly the same.
Exactly.
They did.
Right.
Two, Luigi had slightly different skills than Mario did.
Yeah.
Floated.
Two is such
a horrible game.
No,
I love two.
Two is my favorite.
Two is not even an actual. You realize two
that.
Is not an actual Mario game.
I know it's
Mario
Doki
game.
Doki Panic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the only Mario game I never played past level one.
Yeah, me neither. I have not.
I went all the way and beat it all the way to the end.
Me too.
No, I didn't like it.
I loved it.
You played it all the way? Okay,
yes.
We're the only ones that played it all the way through, apparently.
Because I love the fact that you could play other characters, like Toad and Princess. And
you had to play a little bit differently because they played differently. Toad was strong and fast. Princess had the float.
Yeah.
Luigi could jump longer, but not as long as Princess. And Mario was average. Just everything was okay. I love that.
I loved
replayability.
And I liked the ending of it. I thought it was very different. And
he was dreaming the whole time. It was like, oh, that's so fun.
Yeah.
Who would have done that in a Nintendo game back then?
Exactly.
By the way, that is not
a spoiler.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
Sorry, we are outside of that five-year window.
We are way outside of a five-year window.
Go ahead, Lance.
All right, before we close out, I want to bring everyone's attention to a YouTube series that kind of illustrates the point between modern and retro gaming, whatever side you're on, it doesn't really matter. I want everyone to point themselves, if you can, go to YouTube and just look up Teens React Retro Gaming, especially the Mega Man one. And I've sent Josh the link so you can put that up on the page.
Oh, it's so funny.
Watch it. No matter if you're a new gamer, old gamer, you'll laugh.
Yes.
Last word.
All right. Well, as we established on episode 90 of the Established Facts, our PSA is that the Established Facts is not an ismist podcast. And for episode 91, our new fact is, when looking forward, we must reflect on the past and remember, Lance is the old guy.
Oh. That sounded very prophetic.
Wait up until the end.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 91, and we will catch you later.
See you later.
Lance Slam.
Bye, gang.
Goodbye.
Rick and Randy.
Bye.
Bye.
Please visit us at www.theestablishedfacts.com and our Facebook page, facebook.com/theestablishedfacts. If you'd like to support us by buying some merchandise, visit cafepress.com/castingrobot.